Hello and welcome to another episode of Journey to a Dream, which is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance and supported by the Andreas Racing Association here on the Isle of Man. So as it's MGP and Classic TT 2025, we've got a fair few episodes, which is absolutely brilliant. And it's always great to talk to some of the newcomers. And today we're going to hear from a Manx newcomer who really does have motor racing in his blood. Let's meet him.
My name's Dale Brew. I'm from Jerby East and I'm competing in this year's Manx Grand Prix. It's always been the goal to get to the Manx and I'm finally here. So I suppose it started with my grandfather, Dennis Brew from Ramsey. He raced, and then my uncle Alan, my dad, Andy Brew, and even my other uncle, Ron Brew, they all race motorbikes. My auntie, Jane, she was actually a go-kart, Manx go-kart champion at one point as well. So always been involved in motorsport in one way or the other. So, yeah. I didn't really grow up in the paddock atmosphere because Dad's last race was 94 and I was born in 95. Obviously, I was around a bit with my uncle's riding because he continued till not long ago. But I wasn't entrenched in the paddock atmosphere, but, yeah, still grew up with it a bit, yeah.
And so when did you decide it was something that you wanted to do?
I can always remember waking up, hearing the two strokes going through Sulby Strait for early morning practice, and it was just motorbikes, grew up around them and sort of loved them. So yeah, I can't even think back to how young I'd be, but it's always been the dream.
Do you remember getting your first bike?
Yeah, when I was younger, going through any part of the road where I sat with my mum and I'd just be pretending to be on the bike, whereas really little, and my mum would be going, stop doing that, trying to discourage me from wanting to pretend to be on the bike. And then I think it was about 12 or so quite late really, and then Dad had just been up to a customer's house and they had this little free speed Chinese bike, and he bought it off them for I don't know how much back then, but he bought it and brought it back, and that was my first little bike. And then from that went on to YZ85 motocross bike and started in the motocross scene, and it's just kept on going from there basically.
And was your dad pretty supportive of that? Because he must have known that once you got your foot in the door, where it would lead to.
It's always been my decision. I've never been forced into anything. Like, I had to beg and beg and beg and beg for a motorbike. It wasn't something where he went out and bought a motorbike because he wanted me to ride it. It had to be my decision. It's been the same right the way through. Like, when I decided that I wanted to move on to road racing, it was my decision to do that. And he's never discouraged me. In fact, he's encouraged me to ride on the racetrack as compared to the road, because it is a bit safer. Well, it's safer in my eyes anyhow. He's never discouraged me, but he never tried to force it either. So it's been good.
And what about your mum?
Yeah, she's tried to discourage me every way she can, but no, she's been very supportive, to be fair. I got my Manx Grand Prix entry came pretty late in the year. Just got a message from Gary Thompson saying he's still interested. Of course, I said, yeah. And that was the hardest thing, was telling me mum that I'd been given an entry for the Manx Grand Prix. But she's been supportive, so that's the main thing.
So just take us back then. So you were doing motocross and presumably living and breathing motorcycles. How did that fare alongside things like, you know, having to go to school and do that side of things?
It was a struggle when I was a schoolboy doing motocross. I mean, we didn't have lots of money. I bought my first YZ85 as working with my dad through the school holidays and everything to earn cash to be able to buy a tyre or buy a bit of fuel. I mean, I remember when fuel was £1.10 a litre or something like that, a bit easier. But no, I always had to work to be able to ride, and also if anything went wrong with my bike, my dad, it was, you need to sort that. It wasn't, oh, well, we'll send it to somebody and we'll get it fixed. It was, if it's broken, you fix it. And that's the way I was brought up, so.
That's a great grounding though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because we know how expensive this sport is. But also, many riders sort of say, because they're able to be that hands-on, it just gives you that little bit of confidence, I guess, when you're going out in the machine, knowing that, you know, you've had such a hand in it.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I suppose me coming from a mechanical background, it's sort of like, you see these riders that don't have any anything to do with their bikes. It shocks me a little bit how, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not Valentino Rossi or anything like that, but I need to know what's happening with my bike underneath me, right down to what's going on in the engine, because it's peace of mind. Like, so it shocks me a little bit, people that don't know anything about bikes at all, but still manage to go out and ride them like they do.
So you got that grounding. Is that something then you decided when you were looking at leaving school that you wanted to do a little bit more of? Is that the sort of job you went into?
Yeah, well, like I say, when I was younger, my dad had a mower repair business. So throughout the school holidays and everything, that's what I'd done. I helped him out. And then when I left school, actually went and worked as a welder fitter apprentice for Ramsey Steamship Company. And then unfortunately, when that went down when I was 18, I went back to work with dad. Yeah, I've always been mechanically hands-on. So basically, my career's just kept on going from that point.
And then your racing side of things, how did that progress once you got a little bit older?
Motocross, sort of, when I got to about, basically when I needed to move up from the 85cc to the 125, I didn't have the funds to do that. I had my sister's boyfriend's father at the time gave me a RM125 motocross bike in about 10 boxes of bits. It was absolutely completely stripped, and he says, oh, you can have that, just put it back together and you can use it.
Like a big bit of Lego.
Yeah, so I did, got it back together, but I just didn't have the funds to run it at the same time as exam season sort of thing at school, and then having to progress to start and work. So apprenticeship wage, didn't have the money to be able to fund it. So motocross took a bit of a, well, all motorbike racing, to be fair, just took a bit of a sidestep and focused on getting my job sorted. But then as soon as I got a first few paychecks was when I decided I'd go out and buy my first road bike to convert to a race bike and get out on the track.
And what do you remember about that first time out on the track?
It was a damp, miserable day out at Jerby, and it was absolutely bloody brilliant because I was alone, because all the top boys, of course, were having to swap between putting wet tyres on and dry tyres. I just had an old set of road tyres on, and I was just going round and round and round all day long. It was on the older Jerby track as well, with the, where you came in onto the straight, which quite a few boys now would never have been on that track, but it was it was absolutely brilliant.
And I guess that just cements the will to go further with it. So what happened next?
Just kept building on that, really, and then got to a point, I think I got my clubman licence. And then once you get your clubman licence, you had to start putting a bit more information down. I got diagnosed with a muscle condition that I've got. And basically the specialists that deal with it, they weren't interested in motorbike racing. And it hampered me for quite a few years, because went round in a massive circle between me doctor in Liverpool, the DVLA in the UK, and I just went round in this circle for about 3 or 4 years of trying to get somebody that would say, yeah, you're fit to ride a motorbike. Didn't have a ACU licence for quite some time, so it really knocked me back quite a bit.
And physically, on a bike, does it affect you?
No, not really on the bike. It's as soon as I get off the bike, I'm absolutely, well, as most people are, but I get really sore, really stiff once I'm off the bike. But when I'm on the bike, it doesn't affect me at all. But it was getting somebody to say, yeah, you're fit. And in the end, it was Dr. Gruff Evans over here. He got me in for a medical, and he says, well, do this, do that. You've been riding the bike for how many years? He says, well, you're fit to ride a bike, and we got it sorted. And since then, got back on track and started racing again. And a friend of mine, Neil Burnett, he took us out to Alton Park, and it was absolutely peeing down with rain. He had taken me to Alton Park a few years previous, and anyhow, he says at the end of the season, he says, well, go to Alton Park, do you want to come? So I got my licence back, I said yeah, went to Alton Park, and of course it was peeing down with rain again, and I absolutely loved it. And that was it, started all over again, back on track and wanting to push on again. So yeah,
God, that must have been so difficult, Dale, when it just feels like you're being hampered in such a way. But then, you know, say, get back on track. And then I guess the fight to really take it a bit more seriously, find the support that you need, really started then.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, I had an old 99 SV 650 that I had. Nick Crow, Ryan and Callum Crow's dad, he had a Triumph 675 that he had bought to rob the engine out of. And he was like, oh, it's too good to do that. So he offered me a bit of a deal on that, and then I got that and pushed on a little bit with that. And then I made the decision back end of a couple of years ago that I was getting to the point where I got my national licence, so decided that if I was coming to the Manx, I preferred to do it on a smaller capacity machine. So parked the 675 and I actually bought a Moto3 machine for slower bike to learn the track. And that's what I focused all last year on, was the Moto3. And then, of course, when the regs came out for the Manx this year and they got rid of the ultra lightweight, it was like, ah. There's been a few things that have been chucked at me, but whatever way you throw me, I will stand.
And then your first road race over here, was that the pre-TT?
Pre-TT, yeah. I'd done that on my dad's TZ250L. Again, he's had that sat under the bench for as long as I can remember. It was sat under the bench in my granddad's workshop in Jadar and Ramsey when I was 4 or 5. I can always remember it sat there. And then when my granddad passed away and it got moved out to our workshop in Sulby, it just literally got moved straight out of granddad's workshop into our workshop, shoved under a bench. So that was when, in I think we moved to that workshop in early 2000, I suppose. So it's just been sat under the bench. And then I come to dad, I think it'd be like November, not last year, the year before. I said, look, go do the pre-TT, need an eligible bike, go drag your bike out, let's crack on, get rebuilt. And found a spare engine, found some bits and pieces from various different people, and got built up. And I was out on track, that's a TZ250L, so it's 1983, I think. I could be mistaken there, but it's 80s anyhow. And all the other TZs I was out on track with were like 2000, 2001, 2005, 6. And I was on a 1980s machine, but I had such a smile on my face, and it was so special to me to be able to do it on my dad's old bike. It was absolutely phenomenal. I don't even know if I got a signature from that meeting, but it didn't even matter to me because it was the machine that I'd done it on. The 700's the friendly races, but the pre-TT's the exact same bunch of people running it, isn't it? And it's really friendly atmosphere. And like I say, came away from that absolutely beaming. Then my next road after that was the 700, which was a bit more of a disaster because of the weather conditions hampered us. But I've had mixed results at the Belown circuit, but I enjoy it. That's the main thing. That's all I do this for, is to come back with a smile on my face. I wish I could be right at the front pushing on, and you never know, maybe something will click one day and I can be up there. But so long as I come back with a smile on my face, that's the main thing.
And you still regularly compete with the Andrews Racing Association at Jerby?
Yeah. Obviously, this year I've sort of been hampered a little bit with different things. I do a hell of a lot with Ryan and Callum Crowe, so on the lead up to TT, I think I might have missed a round, and then I've missed a couple of rounds recently for various reasons, but I still try to do as much as I can. Again, local club, if you don't use it, we're going to lose it, sort of thing. And again, brilliantly run up there, so yeah.
One of the things that you did have to go through was Tandragee. Was that June this year when
Yes.
you had an incident and you Yeah. broke your leg? I mean, that's not that long ago, Dale.
7 weeks ago.
You don't even look like you've done anything. Talk me through your recovery.
So I crashed at Tandragee on the Saturday in my first race, walked out of the field, so I thought...
Sorry, walked out of the field with a broken leg?
Yeah, I thought, we're not too bad here. And then I sat down at the side of the field and I thought, knees a little bit sore, I was absolutely sweating. So I took my leathers off at the side of the field, and St John's ambulance were like questioning what the blooming heck I was doing. Anyhow, took my leathers off, and then thought, no, it's sore. But so I walked then from the side of the field into the paramedic car, and then walked out of that into the ambulance, and then sat in the back of an ambulance for a while, and then it started to throb a little bit, and they says, oh, better just go to hospital and get it checked out. Not emergencies. So really kind marshal offered to take me to Craig Avenue Hospital in his car. Can't remember his name, bless him, but hopefully he's listening to this, and if you are, thank you very much. So he took me to Craig Avenue Hospital, and then when I got to Craig Avenue, I sat in the waiting room, started to get a little bit sore. Then the radiologist came in to grab me and says, I could just do with the toilet. And she says, oh, well, it's over there, the other side of the corridor. So are you going to wheel me? She says, well, no, just walk to the loo. And it was at that point that I knew that I was in some serious trouble. And then when the radiologist came back, I eventually wheeled me for an x-ray, and I seen her face after she had just made me walk to the toilet. Yeah, then I knew that I'd done something wrong.
Have you got a really high pain threshold, or was that literally just the adrenaline?
It must have just been the adrenaline, because stupid thing to do, really. But honestly, when I had first come off, I thought, oh, I've got away with this. So then it was Craig Avon. They sent the orthopaedic surgeon down to see me and says, look, you've snapped the top piece off your tibia. It needs plating. So I says, well, do you know roughly how long that's going to take? And they couldn't give me an exact time when it would be operated on. So decision was made to have an uncomfortable boat ride back to the Isle of Man. So Dad come pick me up from Craig Avon, straight down to Belfast Dock, straight on the boat and straight into Nobles, where I got admitted to ward 11 and x-rayed there and put down for surgery on the Tuesday. So got pinned and plated, and then ever since then it's just been non-stop trying to get recovered to get back to be able to ride at the Manx. I don't know whether it's a stupid thing to have done, or but it was a goal and I'm glad I done it.
And part of your recovery, you've obviously been using the hyperbaric chamber, yeah, which we know is something that many riders do use and, yeah, and are so grateful for when they're going through recovery. But I am amazed at that because, you know, like I say, walking here, you're not even limping. It doesn't look like you are. Are you just
Got a little bit of a limp, and it's a little bit worse in the morning after being on the bike, but I'm not in any pain on the bike. I can feel it on the bike, don't get me wrong. I can feel that. My knee's not, I wouldn't say not 100%, but I can feel that there's something there. But a little bit of a limp in the morning, again, between David Downey and Vera Downey as well, looking after me down at David's hyperbaric. And I've had Vicky Christian, physio, working non-stop to be able to get me to where I am. Being at the Palace Health Club every morning for the past, I don't know how many weeks, be 3 weeks solid. Just going down in the morning, going for a swim, then up to the hyperbaric in the hyperbaric, and then trying to work a full day's work, like from the afternoon onwards, which hasn't worked. I'll be honest, I'm absolutely skint at the moment, but like I say, I'm glad I've done it and I've got here and I will get through it.
Oh God, your determination is incredible, Dale, and I think I can guess that there was no point where you ever thought that's not going to happen. You were just so focused on getting on that start line.
Yeah, when I was, even before I'd had the x-ray at Craig Avon, when I'd just gone to the loo and I thought, no, this is a little bit serious. And then Dr. Google starts coming out. How many weeks to recover this? How many weeks to recover that? Going through, because obviously I didn't know what I'd done at that point, but researching all different leg injuries to see what the recovery time is. And yeah, and then when I was in Nobles, I was supposed to have surgery on the Monday, and when the surgeon come in and it was cancelled for the Monday and moved to the Tuesday, I was literally up out of that bed within 5 minutes of being told that I wasn't having surgery that day, and straight down to David Downey in the hyperbaric. There's mixed feelings between different doctors up at Nobles, whether it does anything or not, but I'm a firm believer that it does, because I've managed to get here. If the surgeon's listening, he's probably screaming at me right now saying I shouldn't be here, but yeah.
Well, do you know what? You have to go through your medicals and everything. You've been past fit, so honestly, that is incredible. So you've got to the MGP then. We had the first qualifying sessions, those newcomer laps on Sunday. What was the reality like compared to how you expected it to be?
Whatever anybody says, it just does not prepare you for what happens when you go down. Well, certainly for me, you go down Bray Hill, even though you're following, I have Paul Marley take me, Eddie Wernold and Charlie Hopkins out for our first lap. I got to the bottom of Bray Hill and they had pulled a bit of a gap on me and thinking, oh my God, I thought this was a speed controlled lap. And like I was thinking, what am I actually doing here? Is this right? All sorts of things are going through your head and you're trying to just concentrate, stop thinking about that, just concentrate on the lads in front. And got to Quarter Bridge and there's a little bit more of a gap and I'm thinking, no, come on, push on, need to catch these boys up. And I think it wasn't until we were going up towards out of Union Mills and therefore, oh, I gave it a bit of a squirt out of the corner, so I had a bit more corner speed, and I caught back up with her. It's like, but then the whole way round, like we caught somebody up coming into Ballacrane, and I'm thinking, this is supposed to be speed controlled. This is supposed to, like, it's just absolutely surreal. I got back in, and we had done a 90 mile an hour lap on the speed controlled lap. It's like, oh wow, okay. And then you set off on your own for the first time, and that's like, again, you get to the bottom of Bray Hill and your brain's doing all sorts of weird things. The worst bit was I got to Kurt Michael, and after Douglas Road corner, my head went, slow down. It's like, it's 30 mile an hour here. There's cars parked around the corner. You only, what are you doing? And your head's just saying all these weird things to you. And like trying to put that out of your head, and no, come on, concentrate on what you're doing. Again, you got back around for the second lap, and your head saying the same thing. It's like, oh, what's going on?
I guess because you're so used to the roads here, aren't you? So when you go through Kurt Michael, typically it is 30. There are cars everywhere, so that's really interesting that your brain has not made that shift yet.
It's again, you're going through certain corners and certain parts of the track. We do all these absolute brilliant Milky and his team for the newcomers, doing all these laps. We had to get signatures to be able to get our mountain course license. Absolutely brilliant. But again, like, when you're out there on your own for the first time, and it's like, bloody hell, where's that hedge just popped out from, and why is this a corner? You're up on the mountain mile and you're thinking, oh my god, how many corners are in the mountain mile? And it's just bizarre. I mean, I'm guessing other boys find it a little bit easier, but certainly open your mind and open the eyes, and
no regrets?
Absolutely not. With me injury from Tandragee, it's been an absolute battle getting here. I don't know how I'm not divorced. I mean, Robin, she sat out down on the road there outside now. She's had to put up with hell. I'm an absolute pain in the backside on a normal day, let alone when I've got a broken leg and I'm trying to focus on getting to the Manx Grand Prix. I don't know how I'm not divorced, but absolutely no regrets going down Bray Hill. Absolutely. I keep coming back with a smile on my face. So, yeah, no regrets.
And you're one of the Manx newcomers who've been supported by the Billy Redmayne Memorial Fund and also Tracy's Pictures, among others. They had the Back a Newcomer event on Tuesday of this week. Guessing, certainly from your point of view, what you've been talking about financially, the fact that, you know, you haven't been able to work as much in recent weeks, that must mean a great deal to you.
Oh, yeah. If it wasn't for them, I'd be... All that money's gone straight into my bank account to pay me bills and everything, because I own my own business, so I'm self-employed, so I can't afford to be paying myself. Well, I haven't really been affording to pay myself for the past 6-7 weeks. So, yeah, without the likes of the Billy Redmayne and Tracy's Picks, Halewood, and all my other sponsors as well, Crow Racing, Island Speed Services, Brian Wormsley Joinery, Gary Partridge at Happy Dog Image Solution, he put up with hell, and Reynolds and Turner down the road, Lee at Reynolds and Turner, he helped me out massively, because, again, not knowing whether... I only had my mountain course medical on the Thursday before the event, so I didn't know that I was actually going to be allowed to ride, and then obviously my bike was damaged from Tandragee, and I've been hampered by the cost of everything. It's been a struggle. Another massive sponsor that I really wouldn't be here without is Jackson Racing, Alan and Andy Jackson, another massive pedigree racing family. It was actually 50 years since Alan Jackson Sr. won the Manx Grand Prix. So again, massive racing pedigree family, but without Alan and Andy Jackson, I wouldn't be here as well. They've been absolutely amazing. Andy was on the phone with me last night, straight away. What's happening? What do you think? What can we do? Wouldn't be here without them either.
Two other things I want to ask you about. First of all, you are currently in the Ugly and Co Super Twin Championship, where you're lying third. Does that continue after MGP? What's the next stage?
Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully get back out Jerby and continue, and that would be nice to, again, doing what I do with Ryan and Callum. Me race season's always a muddle of what actually happens. I never ever get a chance to get a full crack at the Jerby Championship, and again this year I haven't had a full chance to get a crack at it. But if I can get back out for the last few rounds and try keep that third place, at least I'll have something to take home.
And the other thing I wanted to ask you about then, you mentioned Ryan and Callum Crowe, where you work as a mechanic for them. And after their TT and Southern 100 success, you supported them at the Northern Sidecar Cup, where they won both F2 races, setting a new lap record. Absolutely incredible. Now, there was no Manx national anthem available, Dale Broome. So what did you do?
So after the first race, they stood them up on the podium and they started playing the British national anthem. The boys were like, no, no. And all the people in the crowd, and like foreign, like Belgian people in the crowd, were saying, no, stop the British anthem. So they scratched around for a minute, or it wouldn't even be a minute, and said, oh, really sorry, we haven't got the Manx national anthem. We'll have to get it for race two. Now, the French had just been on the podium for the Formula One, and they absolutely belted out the French national anthem. So I turned around really, really stupidly, looking back at it now, to Ryan and Callum, and said, sing it, sing it. So they said, go on then. So I started with the first couple of lines of the Manx national anthem, and nobody else joined in with me. Anyhow, that was it. I got a massive round of applause. People caught up, shook my hands. So the organisers said, don't worry, second race, we'll have the anthem sorted. So it was touch and go whether Ryan and Callum were going to go out for the second race, because conditions were dodgy. We had to get back for boat. And then between Tim Reeves and a couple of other people, they convinced them to go out and do the race. And of course, they won. And we got to the podium, and the organiser says, oh, really sorry, we haven't got the anthem. Can you get it up on your phone? One of the other lads, he got it up on his phone. And right before they'd done it, I was just stood there, and the guy with the microphone come and grabbed me and dragged me backwards, and he says, you've got to sing, you've got to sing. It's like, oh, no. I says, no, I can't do it. He says, you've got to, you've got to. And right before it started, I had the phone to play it through the microphone as well, but it was useless. It didn't play any sound, really. And right before it started, I turned round and looked in pit lane, which was the worst thing I could have done. And because it was the last race of the day, it was absolutely rammed. And as soon as I'd done that, that was it. My legs started going. I was like, oh, no. So they made me sing the Manx national anthem for Ryan and Callum. And if you look at the photos on Facebook, Ryan and Callum got absolutely creased over laughing at my singing, because it wasn't great.
But you know what, Dale? You later repeated it at the Newcomers Awards presentation, so clearly you're getting a bit of a taste for this.
Yeah. Again, yesterday, as soon as it got mentioned in that presentation, he said, it's only fit that we start with the Manx national. As soon as he said that, I thought, oh, no. If you're in the Hillwood Centre, the men's toilets, there's a little corridor that goes down the side. As soon as he said that, before he even mentioned anything about singing or anything about me, as soon as I heard the Manx national anthem mentioned, it was, right, let's go hide. So I went down there, and there's, again, the video on Facebook of me hiding, and Jim looking around the room for me, and then I think somebody pointed to where I was hiding, and he come grab me, and yeah, again. At least there's more people in the room joined in with me, and Blake Kelly stood beside me, he joined in with me, so it wasn't quite as bad. And there wasn't quite as many people in Belgium, so my voice was a little bit better yesterday.
You know what I'm going to ask you, don't you?
Oh, no, don't make me do
just
it.
One line. Just one line.
Oh, land of our birth, oh, gem of God's earth, oh, island so strong and so fair.
Do you know what? You've got a good voice. That is amazing. I am so surprised you did that. I was well expecting you to tell me where to go. Dale, I think that seems like the perfect place to leave the podcast for now. We wish you all the very best for the rest of MGP. Is there a goal you've got in mind, or is it literally just what you say, coming back with that smile on your face?
Before I had a leg injury, I had a goal. And then the goal was just to be able to get out. So, to be honest, I've completed my goal for the Manx Grand Prix. So it's just go out now and try and improve every session. Got quite a lot of work to do on that. I had a few issues last night, so got quite a bit to have to get on and do today. But it's a rest day. But yeah, my goal is to keep just chipping away and keep improving.
And where can people follow your progress?
Just on my Facebook page, Dale Ryan Brew. Get on there and give us a like, give us a share. I am horrendous with my social media, to be honest, but I got a post out yesterday and I'll keep trying throughout the Manx. And come down to the crow racing truck in the paddock and see me. And got the kettle, cups of tea, cups of coffee, tins of Coke and everything. So come down and have a chat.
And bring a microphone. Yeah?
Yeah.
Be some karaoke classics, I reckon.
Yeah, we'll get that sorted.
Dale Brew, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Dale Brew in fine voice. Do you know what? It didn't actually take much persuasion, did it, to get Dale to sing that. And I'm sure if you happen to be past the crow tent in the paddock, he will certainly do a rendition for you. So make sure you pop along and see him. And it's always good to hear about the sponsors who are supporting these riders. And what Dale didn't mention was his own company, AMR Limited, as well. So great to talk to Dale. We wish him all the very, very best. I still find it outstanding to think that only 7 weeks ago he had that in incident, because he looks on great form and we're really pleased to see it. The link to follow Dale's Facebook page and hopefully find a little bit more singing. Do you know, if I can find that video, actually, it might be worth sharing that as well. You know, the one from the Newcomers Awards, because I think actually it does need to be seen to be believed. Journey to a Dream is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance, and you can find out more about them and how you can get covered by just visiting their website, which is kawasaki-insurance.co.uk. The Andrus Racing Association, a brilliant organisation over here on the Isle of Man, which we keep on hearing about. Lee Bartram up there is the one that helps me sort out guests for this podcast. If you'd like to be part of the podcast, do get in touch with Lee. Although I'm going to say it again, Lee still hasn't taken up my offers of being a guest himself. So I live in hope with that one. But the Andrus Racing Association link is on the podcast page as well. And just another reminder, if you're listening in time, this is going to be Jerby Day this coming Sunday, August the 24th. Thank you again so much for listening. And if you'd like to get in touch with me about anything you've heard on the podcast, or if you would like to be part of it in the future, bethsb@manxradio.com is the email address. And I'll talk to you again soon.